August 2, 2021, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Keep on tumbling down the hole. can hear the bloodhounds banging as they chase you through the snow. When you know there's no use praying, you keep on tumbling down the hole. When the icy hand of death has found and ravens pick your bones, when that burning ring of flame surrounds you, you'll still be tumbling down the hole. You'll still be tumbling down the hole. You'll still be tumbling down the hole. You'll still be tumbling down.
For Pedro Show, happy Monday. Started off with Congo Blues. This was a 1951 radio broadcast, people, right? 70 years ago. Probably John Coltrane's first recording. He was with Dizzy Gillespie's. Gillespie. Come on, Watt, get together. Dizzy Gillespie's, man. Okay, and after that, we had Tumbling Down the Hole, Tom Adams and The Last Resort. Speaking of which, thanks to John, Miss Melvis, of the Duo Decibel System in Cleveland, Ohio, for making Most Righteous Connect. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got Brother Tom Adams aboard. Welcome aboard, Tom.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So, likewise, we want to thank John and Miss Melvis, right?
Oh, absolutely. They are the best. They're my in my top two or three favorite bands in Cleveland, and I have to kind of say that, right?
Well, how far back you go with them?
I've known John since he approached me after I was I gave a performance, and then, of course, I went to the bar to have a drink, and he came up to me. I'd seen him perform with Slap and a couple of other projects around, but I never knew him, you know, and he walked up to me and said, hey, you're an artist, I would pay to see you. And so, you know, obviously that was a friendship right there. And that was back in 2011, I want to say, 2011, 2012, somewhere around there.
Okay, I want to go back further, because I'm curious about your journey through music, Tom. Please bring your earliest musical recollection that you still got.
Well, I'll tell you what, the earliest musical story I have, I'll just start you with, my mother tells me that when I was about 1.5 years old, when she'd put me down for my nap in my playpen, and when I'd wake up, instead of crying to let her know I was, awake like the other kids did, I would sing Lonely as a Man Without Love by Engelbert Humperdinck, which was on the radio at the time, so I guess Engelbert was my first musical love. After that, I just, I grew up, in the 70s listening to AM radio, everything ranging from disco to Electric Light Orchestra and stuff like that. And then I discovered the Beatles. And the Beatles led to the Stones, who led to the Who and to the Doors, and eventually to Bowie and Robert Fripp and Brian Eno. And then, of course, the Sex Pistols hit. And then everything changed. The Minutemen. Which you might know something about,
was
a little bit. So, you know, I went through high school, as a listener, and I just collected tons and tons of records, never imagined, playing. When I was growing up, at least in my school, like I was in Detroit, Southfield specifically, you know, to say, oh, I want to play rock, or be a rock star is kind of like saying, I want to be the Incredible Hulk. So I just never even imagined it. And then I played in a garage band when I moved to Ohio, a band called Expando Headbando. And that didn't last too long, but we always had a good energy, you know, like we could attract a crowd.
Okay, you were playing guitar?
No, I was just singing.
Oh, you're just a singer. Okay, because I was going to ask, both in Ohio and Michigan, in the pad you grew up, were there any musical instruments?
There was a piano.
Did you jump on it?
I did. I jumped on it a lot when I was a little boy. My grandmother said that I would play along with her just by listening to her and watching her play, but like an octave up or whatever, you know.
Okay. What about the ordeal with lessons? Did you go through that?
I went through that for a while, and then I just stopped. And literally, from the age of like 8 to 10, music really didn't have anything to do with my life. And then I discovered the Beatles.
But do you think that piano lesson taken experience was kind of a negative experience?
Probably, because it put me off of it.
Yeah, because you said you bring it out of your life for 10 years. This is after you fucking were learning how to sing Engelbert as a 2-year-old and jumping on the piano and playing with your grandma, and then you just leave it alone until a Beatles record. So the first record you bought with your own money, Tom?
First record I bought with my own money was probably a collection of Beatles songs called Love Songs.
Okay.
Came out about 1977. Beautiful faux leather binding and everything.
What about the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw was probably Queen.
Okay. Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Nothing like that. I was out smoking.
Okay. I was boys' room at Brownsville Station.
Exactly. And if I wasn't, I was in hell in class. My teachers hated me. I got F minuses regularly.
One of the lyrics, I mean, we ain't heard the song yet, but you gave me a song. You said the teachers hated you because you would not learn their name.
Yeah.
that lyric stuck with me, Tom.
When I was a kid, I moved from a really impoverished neighborhood. My mom remarried, and they moved me to an upper scale neighborhood. We moved from Hazel Park, which was kind of like a biker neighborhood, to Southfield, which was an upper middle class neighborhood at the time. I don't know what it's like now, but I didn't fit in well at all. And I got picked on all the time. Like I was like the low the kid with the leg braces would kick me and beat me up, you know, like that. You know? And, by the time I got to junior high, I figured out that it was actually the teachers, that the teachers were signaling to the students that I was open game. So what I did was
I had trouble with that shit too in junior high.
Yup, and I took the war to the teachers, which it was twofold. One, the teacher learned, don't mess with this kid. He'll make your life a living hell. The other thing it did is scared the fuck out of these kids.
Well, you had balls like church bell, because I was afraid. I had an electric shock teacher, Mr. Patterson. He was convinced every time he turned his back, I was making fun of him. But then it happened again in college where some teachers like you said, gave the signal to the other students, it's okay, this guy is wrong.
Right.
What kind of fucking shit is that? I actually went into one of these guys' office and told him, I said, what kind of shit is this? I could see if I couldn't defend myself as a teenager, but I'm a young man now, and I could see what's going on. And fuck, wow, that's a trip, Tom. You gave me this song, The Wind Blows Low.
Yeah.
It sure fucking does. Let's listen.
I'm
We argued on the Channel train to Paris. The Van Rouge helped us make it sweet again. But by the time that we got down to Lyon, everything I said was wrong, and you cursed me in the rain. We split up for a while in Barcelona. We met up 6 days later in Madrid. I was hoping that the break would make things go a little better for us, and for a little while it almost did. Now I'm in a bar in Copenhagen, and I'm trying hard to forget your name. And I'm staring at the label on a bottle of Cerveza. And every fucking city feels the same. You said to call you when I got to London. A French girl told me that you'd left a note. I said to her, I like your accent, and she thought I sounded funny, so we ended up drinking in Soho. Foolishly, I followed you to Dublin. Like a ghost, I walked the streets of Temple Bar. And all the bright young things were throwing up their Guinness in the gutters. And once I thought I saw you from afar. Now I'm in a nightclub in Helsinki, and they're playing La Vida Loca once again. And I can't believe I'm dancing to this crap, but I'm a chance here. And every fucking city sounds the same. At a cafe in the port of Amsterdam, an email from you said you'd gone to Rome. For a minute I thought maybe, but my funds were running low. And anyway, it sounded like you weren't alone. So I headed north until I got to Hamburg. A chilly city suits a troubled soul. And on the Reaper barn I paid a woman far too much to kick me out before I'd even reached my goal. Now I'm in a restaurant in Stockholm, and the waiter here wants me to know his name. And I can order sandwiches in 7 different languages. But every fucking city looks the same. Arrivederci, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, hasta la vista, baby. Every fucking city's just the same.
Snoring, confessing all that I cry.
off of Pedro Show. That's Tom Adams in The Last Resort with The Wind Blows Low. Started that chunk of music. Then we had Bombas Prendon, Andy Warhol, and it ain't Andy's name. Maybe it is, Warhola. Nah, he had an A. He dropped that A, but this got an E. So. The Ancient of Seconds from Variant, Wort and Tears with Lotus, Every Fucking City, Paul Kelly Live, Sam Lockward featuring Dean Clean, Vote Your Fear, fuck you, Bob Bucko Jr., Go to Places, both these cats are Iowa, Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask, Part B3 from Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore, and finally, The Crimes I've Committed, Tom Adams in The Last Resort. So, you get in this garage band while you're still in school, as a singer. How'd that happen, Tom?
I just bluffed my way in. When I was in Southfield, we did like a lot of acid-fueled music with some of the kids in the high school, but, you know, and made recordings of them, but they were awful. You know, I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just messing around. And so I just, there was some band called, I don't even know what they called themselves at the time, but they needed a singer, and I said, well, I sing, and I didn't know if I could or not. I just told them I could. So they auditioned me, and I...
You should have told them about the Engelbert Humperdinck shit.
I might have. I drank a lot back then, you know, so I... who knows what I told them. But managed to bluff my way into the band, and it was fun because, you know, we had... there were other bands around that, you know, they were just garage bands too, but they had better instruments. You know, they were better, as it were. You know, like they were more accomplished musicians, and they had names like Distant Thunder and stuff like that. And we were like Expando Headbando, which was a whole different attitude. And this is Westlake, Ohio in 1983, just to give you a picture. And I remember distinctly we opened for these guys, and we did a set, and everybody was in this house. It was at a party. Yeah. We did this, and then Distant Thunder came up, and everybody left and went out to the keg. And I just figured, well, everyone's getting, you know, beers or whatever, but they stayed out there. And then when it became our set, we started playing. As soon as we started playing, phew, the house filled right back up. So that was my first taste of that kind of like, ooh, like if you get in with the right energy, you can really kind of move things, you know.
And what kind of stuff was Expando Headbando playing?
All the worst stuff imaginable.
What I mean is...
Smoke on the Water, give me Three Steps.
Okay, so you were copying. You guys weren't doing original material.
Absolutely not. It hadn't even occurred to me to write until years later, about 1989.
So how long are you with Expando Headbando?
Just a couple of years, which when you're young seems like a long time.
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a really long time. But, you know, when you're young and you're stupid and you just got ego and you don't understand each other, you can't communicate. Yeah, you know, it's so hard to keep it together.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's called living a life, and you got to start somewhere. You don't jump on the skateboard and start pulling ollies. Okay, yeah. What about, did you start to develop songwriting?
No, what I did was, after that ended, I didn't do anything. What I did was I drank a lot, went to parties, and made people laugh. Like, I'd do, like, these raunchy comedy, like, you know, a la 1980s, like it was. And people got to know me that way, and I started thinking, you know, I really don't want to be known as, like, a clown. So one day, you know, I had this crush on this girl who didn't know I was alive, and if she did, she would think I was creepy. I was listening to college radio, and I don't even know who the band was or what the song was, but this guy was really, like, tearing his heart out, you know, like he was really, like, expressing himself, like something that actually happened to him. And I thought, boy, I wish I could do that. And I said, you can do that. I said, well, I don't have a band. I don't, you know, I'm stuck here. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have cable. They didn't have the internet. And so I was kind of stuck just working and going home, you know. And I said, you can write. So I became a poet. And through the 90s, I wrote poetry. That's what I did. I published.
Tom, do you remember the first poem you wrote?
Yeah, vaguely. It was really bad. And the first poems that I wrote, you know, that here's the funny thing. I thought, you know, I had something more deep inside me that I could express.
Yeah.
My first, I don't know, 30 or 40 poems were basically variations of "The world is all a stage and we are merely players."
Ah, a little Shakespeare.
Well, that's all it was. Like, every single thing I wrote was a different way of saying that. And I said, I guess that's all I got to say. That's it. You know?
Look, I think whether you did it on purpose or not, you stumbled on a very fundamental truth.
Well, yeah, but it's very, you know, I just had to find my own voice, which took me a long time.
Right.
My own thing to say, which, you know, did. But I did, and for a decade I did that until 1999, when I teamed up with this guy, Dick Hearn, and we formed a band, or not a band, but a project called Trenchcoat Manifesto, which was spoken word, music, rhythmic, multimedia performance art. And that's where we started. That's where the music really started. At first, we were going to put my poems to music. And after doing that to one or two poems, we abandoned that and started writing poems for the music and writing poems specifically for it. And what happened there was, because of the music, my whole writing flowered. Like, all of a sudden I was like writing like way over the level that I was writing before. So when this thing wound down, and the project broke up for a while, for about 5 years, I was kind of like, I don't want to go back to just writing poetry, though there's nothing wrong with writing poetry. I wanted to do music and live performance. And so I bought my first guitar at the tender age of 40 and taught myself how to play it.
Oh, bitch. And,
yeah, so I thought if I could, you know, I was listening to a lot of Johnny Cash. I still do. That was my first record, was Johnny Cash's Greatest Hits. They bought it for me when I was 4 years old, because he had a TV show on at the time. And even though I was real small, I told everyone to shut up and sit down for the whole hour that he was on, because no one could make any noise while the Man in Black was doing his thing, which is pretty funny, actually. Now I look back on it, that was a great show.
So yeah, a lot of fucking good guests, and you usually would do a duet with them.
Yup, you know, so apparently I had good taste, but I still have that record scratched up and everything, but I cannot get rid of it.
Yeah, but you bring him up because you like the simple way he played guitar?
Yes, and that's what I said to myself. I thought if I could just go ding, digga, ding, digga, ding, digga, ding, something like that, I could write to that. And that's where it started.
Well, you know, when he started, he had a band. It was actually a bass and another guitar. I think they were called the Tennessee Two.
Yeah. So, and then they became the Tennessee Three, I think.
Yeah. Well, there was falling out. I mean, I've seen some stuff. That, like everything human, there's sometimes drama. But back to your story here. Okay, so you got a guitar now. You've taught yourself stuff. You don't want to go back to your own partner. You want to, although you like that experience, but you didn't want to rerun. You wanted to take it. So what's next? You put your poems to your guitar parts?
Well, what I started doing was basically just, I spent about a few years with a laptop and a DVD-ROM that had like basic guitar lessons on it. Yeah. And I spent a year or two learning chords. And then I just was learning covers just to learn to play. Then it just so happened that Dick Hearn, who was I was doing Trenchcoat with, got wind of the fact that in Alaska, some radio station in Alaska was playing this Trenchcoat Manifesto CD. So he's like, wow, we haven't even been doing anything with it for like 5 years, and it's getting attention. I said, well, yeah, this is a good thing we had. He said, so we started playing together, jamming at first with the covers, but then we started bringing back a more stripped-down version of it.
Dick was very musical. He could play lots of instruments.
He could play a lot of instruments. He could do,
And you also said multimedia. So did you guys have visuals too?
Yeah. All kinds of like PowerPoint shows, little video clips, flashed on screens. That was during the first phase.
Right.
The second phase was much more stripped down. Just basically him playing whatever instruments he was playing and me doing vocals.
Okay.
And,
you weren't working your guitar in front of people yet?
No, because I didn't have the confidence.
Okay.
I still considered myself a novice.
Sure.
And what I learned later was what you have to do is you got to get in front of people, and that makes you better.
That's a great point. You know, I mean, you got to practice, right, with your guys. But the real practice is gigs.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. When you get in front of people and you learn that you can get away with it, you relax and all of a sudden you can go to the next level. It's like, it's just really literally that a doorman you have to get past.
Do you remember the first gig you played guitar in front of people?
I do. It was a hot day, really muggy in August, and I played Johnny Cash's version of Danzig's 13.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so and that was the first thing I ever did, and I remember my fingers hurt while I was doing it. You know, it's really funny. I'm so nervous, you know.
Sure,
but you know, and this about within a year, I was playing regularly.
Wow. So to break the water, so to speak, it was just getting the conies up to be a hard charger.
Yeah, that was it. And then once I did that, all of a sudden that was that kind of broke me through some kind of barrier that I couldn't define.
Now this ain't like some conceited I'm the best. This is just having the balls, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm far from the best. I'm a pretty good rhythm.
I just want the listeners to understand. It wasn't like you got all overconfident. You just got up enough cojones. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like no. In fact, it took me years. I would literally be like shaking the entire time, just inside and out.
I'm curious, what was Dick's thoughts?
He was very reserved in that. I never really knew his thoughts. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was kind of like this artiste who's off doing his own thing, and I'd bring him
up. I mean, between phase one and phase two of Trenchcoat, you know, he had nothing to say about it. He just thought, well, this is the way it goes.
Well, I'll tell you what, after about a year of that, he left. He just stopped.
And you know why?
Why is that?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, I thought you were asking the post.
I'm still working on the mind reading, but you're going to have to use words.
No, I probably have a billion theories, but I wouldn't presume to know the mind of another man or woman. But
you know what? Sometimes that is about people. Some people have to do it their whole lives. Other people, it's just a little part of their life. Then bye-bye.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be my assumption. I mean, I know that I got really extremely busy with my professional life. Like, now I'm a musician. That's all I do. But at the time I worked for the man I worked for the man for 30 years. Yeah. And so did he. So I don't know. I don't know. He just stopped and
I
just.
Okay, I was just curious. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 2nd, 2021 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Tom Adams. Hold tight for hour two. August 2, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
to the banker. I couldn't get along. Rang up my mother. She told me to come home. Where can I go? It doesn't take no genius. I might as well sell my soul and go work for Jesus. I might as well sell my soul and go work for Jesus.
Yeah. Thank you. That's the way that it is, always has been, and always will be. There's a dark-eyed girl on the shoreline. I believe that she's calling your name.
Show start off the second hour. Tom Adams in The Last Resort. Might as well sell my soul and go work for Jesus. And we had Spain. This is Josh Hayden, Petra's brother, from fucking 25 years ago, live in Lisbon. I lied. Calibos out of Irving, Texas with Wicked Pests. Then Swang from Hokkaido, the big North Island, Japan, huh? Where you want to be in the summertime. It's cool. Rain in August. That's what they need in Tokyo right now. Man. I've been there. Mushiatsu. Not just hot, but the wet hot, huh? Owen P. Jones after that with the Waves. Owen P. Jones out of Hamburg. And finally, Tom Adams and the Last Resort. It's not the open road. So, Tom, you give me all this music by Tom Adams and the Last Resort. When does the Last Resort happen?
The Last Resort happens in 19—I'm stuck in the 20th century. I'm a visitor from the 20th century. That's how I feel. In 2015, I approached a gentleman named Howard Mitzenmacher, and
That's a great name. That is a great name.
The guy's a local legend. He really is. He's an amazing guy. A Cleveland guy. Yeah. He's been active in the local scene for years and years, and now does like a Bruce Springsteen tribute band called Swamps of Jersey. So, which was what he was doing when I met him, or not when I met him, but when I approached him to do this. And he was really super nice about it. He said, I like your songs. He put together a band, and one of the band members introduced me to a gentleman named Dave Manwolf. Dave Manwolf, is a record producer and musician extraordinaire, probably the greatest musician I've ever known. He can play just about anything. He'll correct me on that, but as far as I'm concerned, he can do anything. And, my latest album, in fact, is with the exception of a few noted songs, is me singing and playing acoustic guitar and him doing literally everything else.
It's a duet.
It is whoever happens to be in the room at the time, a la.
Hence the name, The Last Resort.
The Last Resort, right. And, because what happened was, see, I was born Tom Adams. My dad's side, we were descended from Samuel Adams, Patriot Brewmaker. My mom remarried when I was 10 to a gentleman named Oliver Claypool. Excellent guy, right?
Yeah.
But in Michigan, the law at the time, I don't know how it is now, was that because my mom was divorced, I wasn't really her kid legally. I was a ward of the court in her custody. So once she got married, they could, if he adopted me and my siblings, then we would no longer be wards of the court in her custody. We would be their kids. You see, you had to be married to have kids, apparently, in Michigan at the time. So they named me Tom Claypool. I became Tom Claypool. Well, I hated this name because Les Claypool hadn't come around.
I was going to say there's a bass player with that name.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, everybody made fun. I'm not even going to tell you the names they use, but if you rhyme around with Claypool, you can come up with something pretty easily. The tested the name. So when I started writing poetry, I started using Tom Adams because I thought it sounded more like a poet. Come to find there's 5 trillion Tom Adams. They're banjo players, they're painters, sculptors, they're everything except what I do. So I add that and the last resort. So that's me.
Okay.
And Dave and whoever else is with me.
Tom, that makes perfect sense in my book, okay? Look. Here's the tune you gave me, I'm the best.
Thunder, the falling hail. I'm the
Out that chunk of music, Tom Adams in The Last Resort, I'm the Best. Then Tom Rechion, Lean Your Eye Into the Picture. Incredible cat from the LA Free Music Society. How I'm Spending My Summer Vacation by Bad Flirt and Davey Von Bolin. Bad Flirt, last guest, Jasmine. That was before she was No Joy, she was Bad Flirt. She likes the two-syllable names. Then finally, Tom Adams in The Last Resort with From You Under Me. Tom.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process you use for making music with The Last Resort.
Well, one of the things I like about being a songwriter, the way I do it, is that I get the two-step. The first is completely me. I have total control over the construction and the layout and the words and the melody and just the chord structure and everything. And then once it's all mine completely, I turn it over to a bunch of relative strangers and they change everything about it. Awesome. You know what I'm saying? Like I have veto power, but as much as I use it, it's really surprising how little I use it.
So it's like, let me, let, tell me if I'm on the right track here. It's like somebody going to the store and getting a bunch of grain and pasta, giving it to the cooks, and then they bake whatever they want out of it.
It's, you know what? That's a great analogy because, you know, even though I recognize what it is so different from what I expect most of the time, so, and usually 10 times better.
In a trippy way, you have to relearn your stuff after they get a hold of it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. And I have to, you know, the fun part is I get to kind of like hear it almost as if I didn't have anything to do with it. you know how when you make a recording?
Sure.
People can hear it the way it's supposed to be heard.
Yeah. That must be a trip. Kind of revelatory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beforehand, when you're man alone, that's you and you're like in your laboratory, your laboratory, whatever the fuck. And then they get it, and then it's kind of a reacquaintance mission, right? Now,
in fact,
go ahead.
No, that's all right.
Before you go into the studio, do you test this out in front of people at gigs?
Absolutely. By the time I take it into the studio, these songs have been played so many times you wouldn't believe it.
I think that's the greatest idea because, man, like we were saying before, real prac is gigs.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard people say, you know, you don't want to play it too much before when you write something before you record it because it's not fresh and new. But let me tell you something. When you have the confidence to really sing and perform, what you do is, as a singer, you focus on the words as you're saying the words. It doesn't matter how many times you've done it.
Right.
If you've focus on that words and experience it. Force yourself to experience those words. It doesn't matter if you've done it a million times. It'll come out.
Yeah. Well, you got to make them live for that moment or you're just sleepwalking. You're connecting dots, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I pride myself on not letting anybody sleep.
That's so great. Now, at the end of this process, do you find a lot of your words get scissored? A cutout?
Only by me.
Oh, only by you. Okay.
Only by me, but a lot gets cut. I am a bit, I always tell people my number one talent is editing.
Well, I gotta tell you, with my bass parts, I always start out with too much, and I gotta get rid of too much.
Absolutely. Or you'll come up with probably 9 out of the 10 things you come up with is just not gonna make it. It's just not good enough. But you find that thing, and you put aside everything that works. And after a while, you got a nice big pile.
Right. You know? Now, a carpenter would tell you, you don't want to remove too much material because it's very hard to put back. But as you slowly go, you find out about the right amount.
Right.
So, yeah. There's an art to it. And you think, has it gotten easier for you the longer you've done it this way?
To be honest, it came pretty easily when I started. What I find is that I have more growing complexity, I guess is the word. I find that I'm stretching a little more and trying things out a bit. But when I first started writing, I think I wrote one song that was crap, and then the second song is on my second album. It's called She Couldn't Be With Me.
Well, that's happening. You know, there's something about the first time you do something that's fresh and stuff. Maybe there's something to what those people are saying about recording, but I like playing in front of people. We're at the end of the second hour of August 2, 2021 edition. Watt Peter Show special guest, Tom Adams. Hold tight for hour 3. August 2, 2021, third hour of the Watt Peter Show.
Things fall together. Sometimes things fall apart again. He reads the note she penned by the light of the moon. The whole world's a silhouette in dreams and memories are broken pieces of a window. She condemned him with a kiss to that melancholy bliss. Now he's only left with me just as sad. Praying from some pitiful zoo, he wakes on a city grave. The steam obscures the memories of a cruel, brutal, beautiful world. She condemned him with a kiss to that villain, Bully Blitz. Now he's only left with this exquisite dilemma. Exquisite.
Thank you. but she don't love me. The heat we had is growing cold. So she asked if I would set her free. The life with me is getting pretty old. The shadows flicker in the light on this cold and lonely night. Still echo in my head all the things that she said. How did we ever fall apart? How did it even start? I'm left here with the broken shard. Slip out of my hand like the dry desert sand. How did we let this go so far? How could we ever part? I'm left here with the broken shards of a heart.
That I'm grateful for is that, like, in the 90s, I was a poet, and in the 2000s, I was a performance artist, and in the 2010s, and now I'm a songwriter and a musical performer. And so I've never allowed myself to get stagnant. You know, everything's new to me, you know.
Yeah. I got to tell the people, we started the third hour off with Exquisite Dilemma, Tom Adams in The Last Resort. Then Port Sunshine with Hawaiian Wave out of Hamburg. Track one, this is Tollum with the Portland Improvisers from August 10th, 2019. Turn, Turn, Turn. I played that, Pat. I think I donated a tuner. And finally, Broken Shards. Well, they're kind of shards. no, when, like, I always think when people say assless chaps, I mean, what other kind of chaps are there? You mean there's chaps that have the ass? Okay.
Hey, I needed to fill
what
a couple.
What do you call that, a double superlative? Yeah, okay, more better, yeah. Tom Adams in The Last Resort. Tell me about Broken Shards.
Broken Shards was literally one of those songs where I was driving my car down a windy country road, and this melody pops into my head, the chorus, my baby loves me, don't you don't love me, that part. And that's all I had. And I could not, at the time, I didn't know how to play that music. I had the music in my head, but when I'd sit down with the guitar, I could not figure out what chord progression to use. So I just basically sat on it for a couple of years. And then one day I just said, you know, you should really try that, you know, season. And I sat down and just boom, came up right that, you know, I figured out the chords like bada bing, bada boom. And
Tom,
then.
Tom, let me ask you, how did you remember? Do you speak it into a voice memo like on a leash or a little tape recorder or?
No, it was stuck in my head.
Just stuck in your head. Wow.
Just stuck in my head. It was like it was on the radio or something. Like you ever hear, you know, you hear something and it just keeps repeating in your head. It was almost like I couldn't forget it.
Right.
You know, and it was just so catchy to me. I thought it was just so catchy. I just couldn't forget it, you know.
Now, I wanted to, you said you had the chorus. What about the verse? Did it elude you? Or did you?
Once I had the chorus figured out as far as how to play it on the guitar,
yeah.
Then I just had to figure out the, like, music. And I figured out, like, what kind of chord progression would go between that, you know, those choruses.
Right.
And once I had the chords figured out, then it became just a question of humming. The, you know, like, what would the melody be humming? And then once I have the melody humming, I literally just figure out, well, what would they say? You know, like you just, you fill in with the words. It's a really almost like a puzzle type process.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you do this thing called demos? Like you make demonstration versions of these?
Before? Yeah, first I make a scratch recording with my phone, just right. So I have. If I'm able to, like, you know, I had this, little, 8-track, digital recorder that I got back in 2003. And just recently I switched over to Reaper. So, I used to make all my demos on that and then, use those to play to people, when we were recording and stuff.
Yeah. That's to give them the, ammunition to, build the fucking next record. Okay. All I can think of is you. I'm going to play that.
Supposed to do? nothing else makes me blue. 'Cause all I can think of is you.
Thank you.
of the shadows in the cobwebs of her mind. She went wading through the shallows to see what she could find. But lurking in the waters was a beast with ghastly claws. So I'm singing you a sonnet to love that never was. He was brilliant, he was bashful, he was funny, he was wise, he was thoughtful, he was gentle, he was the apple of her eyes. Then one day he took a rifle and used it just because. Now she's singing me a sonnet to a love that never.
Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Started that chunk off, All I Could Think of You, Tom Adams and The Last Resort. Then we had Eric Slit with The Dirge. Papa Corona Come Dancing. This is Egregious Phil, but this is Brother Phil with his one of his different aliases where he reinterprets. I think this is a Jeff Beck tune turned in. This is the Flashing Amber Signal version, he says. And Mammoth, Big Bear. Be careful with the fires and stuff. Overall, after that, brand new, I'm Scared. And Tom Adams in The Last Resort, finally, A Love That Never Was. So, you know, being a poetry writer first, right?
Yeah.
You probably, you know, yeah, got into this habit of collecting, you know, like a notebook full of poems, right? Do you have a notebook full of lyrics that haven't been
actually,
used yet?
I don't, actually, which is really weird. I used to, when I was writing a poet in the 90s,
yeah.
I'd go in the bathroom at work, I'd be writing, I'd be at the bus stop writing, I'd be on a bus writing, I'd be at home writing. Now, I don't write as much, but what I write tends to be better. You know what I mean? I guess I'm always writing in my head, but I'm ignoring most of it because I've learned what's garbage. And then, but when something good comes into my head, then all of a sudden I hop to it and I write something and then I'm done.
Well, you were saying something about you figure yourself kind of an editor. You think those editing skills have gotten better and better. So you're like ahead of time cutting the wheat from the chaff.
Exactly, like before it even grows. It's like I get an idea and I go, nope. oh, this is great. Nope. You know, and then finally, yeah, I'll come up with something good. And
with you,
and
then, like, is it the words that come first and then you bring the music?
It did, it was for most of the songs I wrote, but recently it's been switching.
Oh.
The last song you played, A Love That Never Was, is a perfect example of that. I was playing around with finger picking a little bit because I've always just strummed. And I came up with the chords for that, kind of gently picking it, and it sounded like a really beautiful, delicate melody. And I've been playing with it almost like an exercise to learn how to do this finger pick, picking that I was doing. And at a certain point, it was a Saturday morning, I said, you know, I should probably write words to this. This is pretty enough that I should write words. And literally within 3 hours, I wrote it. Like the words to it, without thinking about it beforehand or anything. I literally had to look up. I came up with the line, A Love That Never Was. And then I had to look up words that rhymed with was, because apparently there's only like four of them. Or three of them. And I had three of the four. So it was almost like a weird exercise, you know. I had to work within these constraints, but still write a lyric that I felt would be worthy of that melody, you know. So
it seems like the process... kind of, yeah, like you said, it switched around. Now it's on demand. Like, here's music. Now I come up with words instead of the other
right.
way around. Yeah.
And I wish it was. I wish it wasn't. I really wish that I was, like, creative all the time. I wish I was constantly writing things down. But I just, you know, I've become so, I have to, like, divide it between the music now and the business, you know.
I got to tell you, you know, maybe you've heard this before, but my pop told me you can wish in one hand. And you can shit in the other, and you tell me which one fills up first.
Exactly, right? Dad is a wise man.
So where can people find you on the internet, Tom?
Well, they can find me on Spotify. They can find me anywhere you can download music.
No, what I mean is there a Tom Adams website?
Well, there is. At the moment, it's not fully up, but right now you can find me at tomadamsandthelastresort.herenow.com.
Okay, spell now, that whole thing, because some people, I remember the Adams family, there was two D's, right?
That's right. It's T-O-M-A-D-A-M-S and A-N-D, the last resort, T-H-E-L-A-S-T-R-E-S-O-R-T dot. Here now, as in hear this, HERENOW.com. So it's Tom Adams at the last and the last resort dot here now dot com. That, I'm going to actually get a Tom Adams and the last resort dot com website, but what this will eventually do once my album is released on October 2nd, it will provide links to every single,
October 2nd. Okay. That's an important day.
Yeah. Yeah. And before that, if you go to that website, you can hear the entire album for free in its entirety.
Okay, people. And we played a lot here today, too.
Yep.
So, can't wait to hear more out of you, Tom. Again, I want to thank John, Ms. Melvis from the...
Thank you, John. Thank
Decimal
you.
System, yeah, for making this connect and you coming on the show and sharing some of your musical journey with us, Tom. Thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. People, it's been August 2, 2021, Dish and Walk Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.